if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
The first step is to understand what 3D printing is and the types of problems that can be solved through 3D printed solutions. And what we're hoping to do is kind of spark this almost a movement of kids seeing themselves as change makers.
Rich Lehrer knows the best way to teach science, technology, engineering, and math is to apply it to daily life. Rich holds a number of titles in the area of project-based learning, including as a member of the National Faculty of Nonprofit Buck Institute for Education. And he's both the innovation coordinator and eighth grade STEM teacher at Brookwood School in the greater Boston area, at which he implemented an innovative program. Rich is the creator of the Brookwood 3D Design Problem Bank Project, in which his students use 3D printing to solve problems in the community around them. Rich, before we get to talking about all the cool stuff that you were doing with problem-based learning, what do you remember best about your own days as a student that has now come with you to what you do today?
Oh, that's a great question. So in fact, I often, when I'm talking to other educators or people that are interested in our work, I often reference my own education, and not necessarily in a positive way, but I often reference the lack of sort of authenticity and the lack of real-world applications. And certainly there were those, you know, applications of the things that I was learning, but it wasn't always very clear to me. So I sort of, when I started teaching about 27 years ago, I made a commitment to my students that I would always look for ways to have them see the actual applications of the work that they were learning and the things that we were having them do in class. So certainly my own childhood informs my work as a teacher, that's for sure.
When you say authenticity, I kept finding the words authentic design in researching you. Let's define what that means before we go on.
Yeah, so we use that term to mean any time that students do something that actually makes a difference. So that could be something they do that makes a difference in their life, in their family's lives, in their school, in their broader community, or the world. So we are breaking some really interesting ground in the field of having students do things that matter and actually have impact. And most of the times we're actually talking about them working with other people and doing things that have impact in the lives of other people as well.
Tell me, please, about the way that you did this. I love your Brookwood Stove project, but I'm going to leave this up to you because you have about four different projects where you're doing that right now.
That's a great question. So, in fact, one of the challenges of speaking about my work is to try to weave the thread that goes through the different things that we've been doing. So maybe I can just start by doing that. What we've really been looking for is to have students do projects that come from an area of having them actually design solutions to real-life problems and then use that to have them connect with people in their community and their world. So there are many different ways that that's kind of manifested itself over the years. And you mentioned a stove project that we did a while ago. So this is now about 6 years ago, but I was working with here at Brookwood, and we made a connection with MIT's D-Lab. And if anybody's listening and they want an example of some people that are really literally changing the world, this is an organization. D-Lab is a section of MIT's engineering courses, and what they do is they actually use authentic problems around the world to teach their students how to design solutions and then work with communities around the world to then scale those solutions. And I had contacted them saying that I was looking to do a similar sort of thing with middle school students, and I asked them if they knew of any examples of that, and they asked me if I would consider working with them. So we began about 6 years ago looking for middle school STEM engineering projects that did just that. And that stove project was one where we had students in Uganda, Rwanda, Brazil, and here in the United States. And they designed and built some efficient biomass stoves and then compared results. And in the process, we got them looking at their own energy use and then comparing different design features of their stoves to look at how they could change efficiency. And really what we were trying to do was get students to both open their eyes to energy use in their respective communities, but then also to use that authentic design piece to then open up conversations between kids. And I often refer to that, even though the work I do right now is very different from students building stoves out of brick or mud or metal, there are a lot of similarities between the work that we're doing now. So I mentioned that stove project more because it kind of laid the groundwork for something that happened about 3 years after we did that project. I came across a YouTube video, and the video was about the very first 3D printed prosthetic device that had been created. And when I saw that video, it was just a YouTube that I saw in 2013, it had a profound effect on me because my son Max had been born in 2010 with a condition called symbrachydactyly, and that prevented the fingers from developing on his right hand. And my wife Nicole and I, we weren't really looking for any prosthetics or devices, but when I saw this video, I thought that would make an amazing project for me to engage in. Not that I'm a huge tech person or a huge maker, but this just seemed to be something that would provide a really nice little tinker project for me. So I Skyped with the gentleman that had created it, and in the process of having that conversation with them about the device they had created and posted open source online for anybody to access, when I was speaking with them, I realized, oh, this could make an amazing project from some students of mine. So the next year, we spent the school year, I worked with 12 students, and we essentially, over the course of that time, built a functional prosthetic device for my son, Max, who was 3 by that point. And when he actually used the device to pick up some little blocks with his right hand, which he had never done before, it was fairly profound and transformative for my students and for Max and certainly for me. And I often talk about how my professional and personal life pivoted in that sort of 5 seconds when he went and actually picked up the blocks, because that essentially set us on the road of using 3D printing as a vehicle to get students to look for problems in their world and then use 3D printing and 3D modeling and designing programs, but using 3D printing to create prototypes and then iterations of sophisticated solutions for real life problems.
What a cool thing to be able to do. From there, did you immediately start the 3D design problem bank?
What I found is a lot of schools kind of leap in and they buy the, so there's a whole kind of generation of what's called emerging technologies right now. So 3D printing is one, but laser cutters and CNC routers and all these different types of equipment that allow students to turn ideas into actual tangible devices. And what often happens is schools will sort of leap in and they'll get the equipment and then they're scrabbling to justify the cost outlay for the equipment. And then oftentimes I feel schools sort of choose low-hanging fruit, things that were designed by other people or sort of more trinkets and plastic. And one thing that I've learned in this work is the last thing the world needs is more plastic trinkets and keychains and things like that. So the interesting thing is when we did that prosthetic project, we didn't have a 3D printer. We had another school print the pieces off for us. And then by the time Brookwood had 3 printers donated by parents, we had already established that we were going to use these incredibly powerful tools to have students create authentic solutions to problems. And so really, you know, once we did the prosthetic project and then we got 3 printers, it became really clear to me that we needed to find other things for kids to be doing that actually got them to feel like they were solving real problems. And it was literally just, you know, a few weeks after we got the printers and I started doing some of my own designing. I was designing just replacement pieces for different toys that we had around our house. And so my first design was a replacement piece for a small wooden train set that we were missing a piece. So I just used that as a chance to kind of cut my teeth in terms of 3D designing. I'd never done any 3D designing before. And as soon as I did that, I realized, oh, every student could be having this experience, but the limiting factor is going to be the problems that they would be solving with 3D printing. So I realized that we needed a way to just kind of appeal to our community, that there must be other people like that that could just use a small piece that had broken or a little solution for something or something that is relatively simple in terms of design, but that could actually play a really important part in terms of having, you know, a piece that actually works to solve a problem. So I started to have some conversations with some of the teachers at our school and realized that every person I talked to had 2 or 3 of these problems. And I realized that if we just made a website, that would be the clearing house, the sort of repository for those problems. So we started to load them onto a website, and that was about 3.5 years ago, and that kicked us off into this world now of problem banks. So we have our school problem bank. If anybody's listening and they would like to know a little bit more about our problem bank. One thing that I often get teachers to do is just to take a look at our problem bank. If you just Googled design problem bank or 3D problem bank, it would pop up, but the actual URL is just designproblembank.weebly.com. And what we've been doing is try to make that not only a repository for our school problems, but we also have a lot of information there about how other schools can make their own problem bank in the same way that we created ours, and just kind of like put some of the things that we've learned, mistakes we've made, and also things that we've discovered. And I'm also working now with Ultimaker, is a company that is one of the world leaders in terms of making 3D printers for schools. And I'm working with them as one of their, a group of educators who are doing interesting things in 3D printing, and they're called the Ultimaker Pioneers. And we're actually talking about this summer creating a global problem bank where schools around the world will post problems there, and then we can get schools around the world seeing what sort of problems different schools post, and kind of leaping into a little cultural study there about seeing what sort of problems come up from different schools. But then the interesting thing about 3D designing is it is possible, if designs are put open source on the internet, it's possible for people to look at each other's designs and even tweak each other's designs and take them and modify them or print them off. And so what we're looking for is a potential for schools to, you know, just collaborate through this idea of looking for things in need of a design solution and then going ahead and empowering and kind of charging students to be the ones to do the designing. And so a very similar, at that point, you know, when I say that, it feels like it's just a kind of a digital version of what we were doing with the cook stoves, but just using technology in a bit of a different way. So,
once again, the URL for the 3D Printing Design Problem Bank is designproblembank.weebly.com. That's designproblembank.weebly.com. Where do we find updates on the Global Problem Bank, which sounds really cool?
Yeah, that's great. So that is a project that is just in the idea stage right now. And in fact, one of the first things when we came up with the idea of the Problem Bank 3 years ago, one of the first ideas was to actually involve other schools around it. And we realized that there was enough work just kind of doing this with our school here. But we've now got to the point where it's just a natural extension to connect kids around the world through that work. So if people went to Ultimaker Pioneers, there's actually information there about how teachers eventually will be able to get involved with this project. And I think if you just kind of keep looking at the Ultimaker Pioneers website, that's where they house all their education projects. And you'll see some updates about just different types of education 3D printing curricular ideas, but also I'm sure we'll eventually be posting there as well about the problem bank. So.
Ultimaker Pioneers. Let's, in our imagination, do the experience that the students are going to have with the problem bank. We're sitting in your classroom right now, and we're about to help somebody with an authentic project. What do you tell the listeners and me to do? What's happening?
Yeah, so you would think that the finding of the problems would be the easy part, but in fact, the most challenging part of this work is helping communities understand what sort of problems could be solved through 3D printing, and it is not every problem out there that could be solved through 3D printing. So the first step is to understand what 3D printing is and the types of problems that can be solved through 3D printed solutions, and then begin to sort of run problems in the community through that sort of rubric. And in fact, on our website, we have a little diagnostic tool that we created that allows schools to run a problem through it and determine whether or not that problem might be a good fit for this work. And once a school has a number of problems, and then if they've created their own website or if they're actually accessing somebody else's, there's a possibility there for schools to compare the problems that they found with other schools' problems. And, you know, once the problems are there, that seems to kind of spark interest. Once people see the types of problems that can be solved, then all of a sudden they start thinking about other problems in their school or lives that might be solvable. And what we're hoping to do is kind of spark this, almost a movement of kids seeing themselves as change makers in their own communities and world, kids seeing themselves as empowered and able to solve problems. So, you know, we're actually really, your question was a good one. What we're looking to do is make this a really organic initiative that you had mentioned, kind of students sitting in a class doing that. In fact, the problem bank itself is just this place where any kids can go to solve problems. And we have been sort of resisting the temptation to turn it into a class or have it be just sort of one place in a school day that kids go. And what we're looking to do is have the problem bank just be a, you know, it's almost like a little area where any kid at any point, they could do it at home, they could do it in a class. If a teacher is looking for a chance to have their students have that experience, you know, the problem bank is the constant, and then how students access it becomes the variable in the equation.
And in fact, I love that perhaps something like a scout troop or a Boys and Girls Club or something like that, this would lend itself very well to those.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, we're finding that there are possibilities for very specific types of problem banks. So, for example, I'm working with an educator by the name of Valerie Peters, and Valerie's been working in the world of creating assistive musical instruments for kids that might have an upper limb difference. And she has typically been working with engineers and in fairly conventional materials like wood and leather. And when she saw a little presentation I was doing on 3D printing, she realized that we could have a, you know, adaptive or assistive musical instrument problem bank, a problem bank completely dedicated to those sorts of problems. And I think that's becoming a possibility that, although we were talking about just sort of a general kind of universal problem bank, I think what might actually be a direction we're heading in is there are just kind of specific problem banks that deal with certain types of design challenges that kids certainly have the potential to design solutions. And one thing we haven't talked about is once we had such success with our problem bank, we realized that it would be a shame just to kind of keep it here in our school. So last year, one of my Brookwood colleagues, Andy Johnson, and I, we decided that we would take this work out into our community. And so we connected our students with a residence from a local seniors housing residence. And we had our students work with them to, first of all, kind of establish a relationship and a friendship. And then they began looking for the similar types of problems, but problems more associated with the lives of seniors and what might be some issues that students could design assistive technologies to help seniors with. So this is a group of sixth graders, and we started with just a bunch of potential problems in need of some solutions, and by the end of it, we had our kids having designed, you know, a better bingo chip that's easier to pick up for people with arthritis, and card holders, and little key sleeves that kind of made a little more leverage, made it easier to turn keys and locks, and collars to go around coffee cups to stop coffee from spilling onto hand. And it just became this incredible project where not only were students then creating actual solutions, but they were making these deep connections with people in their community outside of the school that we had never experienced before. And certainly I've been involved in school community service projects before, but nothing like what we've seen in this project. And in fact, we hear from the folks that work with Harbor Light Community Partners, is the group out of Beverly, Massachusetts that we've been working with, and they tell us that they see incredible engagement from their seniors in this project, just because they are seen as kind of equal partners, or their viewpoint is as important as the kids' viewpoint, and oftentimes the seniors have very good design and problem-solving perspectives that our junior engineers don't quite have.
What really impressed me about this, the Design Girls project, was you were working with sixth graders, and if I remember rightly, sixth grade is just about the time the young girls start kind of losing their self-confidence. What's a favorite story about any of the young girls with whom you were working on this project about how this helped her to grow?
Yeah, so that actually, you're exactly right. Our first version of this we did as a pilot project. We have something here at Brookwood called Steep Week. Our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders in May, we take 1 week and we have them just do sort of what we call a deep dive into some aspect of experiential education. And we had decided that we would do some sort of a 3D designing week with our students, and Annie had stumbled on the idea of connecting with Harbor Lake Community Partners. And as we started to talk about what might be some other needs in our community that we could address through this, we realized that we were seeing low numbers of girls involved in any sort of 3D designing, and even more generally our STEM programming. Whenever students have a chance to choose, for example, a STEM Steep Week course, we would see typically 3/4 or higher of the students that would apply for those or indicate that they would like to be involved were boys, and we would see 1/4 or fewer were our girls. And so we kind of were a little bit provocative, and we did something that hadn't been done at Brookwood before, but we decided that we would make this Steep Week course exclusively for girls. And we were able to justify that by saying that we had established this clear need for girls to be involved in 3D designing. And in fact, when we talked to them, girls, about why they were being so reluctant to go into some of our tech work or our 3D designing, they expressed that it wasn't necessarily because they didn't want to do it or they weren't interested in it, but one thing they didn't want to do was feel like they were competing with the boys at our school in those things and to have their designs or their work be scrutinized by the boys. And so we realized, we actually asked them what could be a possible solution here, and they had indicated that if there was a girls-only STEM or design course, that they would be excited about that. So, in fact, we then just opened it up just to girls, and I would say every one of them experienced the type of growth that you're talking about. So it was 5 days. Not one of the students at the start of the week had any design experience at all. They had never done any 3D, what we call CAD designing or modeling. And so just for them to have this idea that there was an authentic, real person at the other side of this, you know, kind of technical design thing, and for us to help point out to them that through the design they would have a chance to impact somebody's life and make a connection with somebody in their community, that was very compelling for these students. And I think actually the end result, the final quality of the student designs was incredibly high. We were completely kind of floored when at the end of the week we saw the sophisticated quality of the student designs, and we realized that what we had done is we had tapped into something really essential in these girls' lives. That was the interest in making a connection with somebody in their community and then doing something to work with them to solve a problem. And I think we realized that we had sort of stumbled onto something there in the world of incorporating more girls in the whole world of STEM and design. And we now do that, even though that was just a one-week pilot that we did, we had such great results from that we actually do that now with all of our sixth graders, boys and girls. And so all of our students who are in sixth grade, once a month we head to seniors' residence and we have students continuing to do the type of work that we had done in that one-week, steep week course.
You've already given two great resources, the Altimakers and the problembank.weebly.com. Are there any other, before we wrap up, resources you would like to give for fellow educators, any community leaders, or anybody who'd like to know a lot more about this and we just don't have as much time as we might like to have?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different places I would go. So I actually have a lot of this housed on my own website. So I realized, as I sort of alluded early in the conversation, one of the challenges has been trying to sort of help other people kind of see what are the threads that go through all these different things. So I created my own website, and it's just richlehrer.weebly.com, and my name is spelled richlehrer.weebly.com. And that's just a website that has links to a lot of the different initiatives that we've been talking about. A couple of organizations that have been hugely supportive of our work. Certainly MIT's D-Lab. I recommend anybody that wants to see the kind of more grown-up version of what we're doing here to check out their website. And again, they don't have a ton of resources, but they're actually kind of a primary source of this sort of work, so you can kind of see what they have their students doing. Another organization that's been really supportive of our work has been WGBH. That's our local PBS station. So WGBH has a program called, it was originally a TV show called Design Squad, and now they've turned that into a web-based program called Design Squad Global. And they've taken some of the initial ideas that a number of those of us that were kind of in the world of using STEM projects to connect kids around the world, they now have Design Squad Global, which is really just an amazing program that does exactly that, teaches engineering through connecting kids around the world. So I recommend anybody who's out there take a look at that. And if anybody's interested in the whole work of 3D printed prosthetics that I mentioned, there's a couple of organizations that I would mention. One is called eNable. That's little e, and then Nable, N-A-B-L-E. And that's a worldwide organization or open source community that grew out of those initial kind of forays into 3D printed prosthetics. And they are a massive group of 10,000 plus folks around the world that are just trying to really advance this idea of ensuring that anybody who needs or would like to have a 3D printed prosthetic has access to it. And there's another organization called LimbForge, LimbForge, and they are taking the whole idea of 3D printed prosthetics and trying to address the global unmet need for cheap and customizable prosthetics as well. So those are just a few of the organizations off the top of the head. I also do consulting for an organization called the Buck Institute for Education, or BIE, And the Buck Institute for Education teaches educators or trains educators to do project-based learning. And I highly recommend anybody that's looking for not just the types of authentic design or maker experiences like the ones that I'm talking about here, but anybody who's interested just in the idea of using these types of authentic and deep and rigorous projects to teach kids about concepts and content and rigorous learning in a course. If you check out BIE's website, www.bie.org, you'll see lots of information on how to do project-based learning and do it right.
Rich, if Max or any of your students or anybody hearing this could only get one thing from you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference, what would you want them to take away from the work you're doing?
So I think, without a doubt, the thing that I have discovered throughout my career of teaching, but certainly the last kind of 6 or 7 years has just made this so obvious to me, is that when students have work in school that matters, that means something, that has impact in their life and the lives of others, every kid engages with that. I have yet to see a student who has the potential to affect some change in their community and world not leap at that opportunity. And, you know, having been a fairly conventional science teacher for, you know, about half or two-thirds of my life, I've seen that it is possible to get students to turn off from what should be exciting schoolwork by just kind of making it separate from the real world. And as soon as students see that there are not only real-world applications of the concepts they're learning, but that they can actually use those concepts to then create solutions to problems, that is highly engaging for kids. And I often see something that just seems like it would be a very small project. For example, I had a group of 6th or 7th, 8th grade boys last year take on this project of designing a new bracket for our library. One of our students was in our library when one of the shelves came crashing down because of the weight of the books, and they were so shocked by that that they kind of came to us and said, would it be possible for us to take some time to develop a new, stronger bracket for our shelves so that nobody would get hurt? And I watched a group of 7 or 8 8th grade boys just become absolute actual engineers as they not only created different prototypes, but then they developed a system for testing the load that would, you know, cause them to fail and try different designs. And I use that as just a metaphor for when kids see that there's an actual reason why they're doing something, or there is a real application that will change their community, the sky is the limit in terms of how they will engage with that.
And I would be curious how you go from being a, quote, fairly conventional science teacher to where you are now. What was the catalyst?
Yeah, so it was a few of those little kind of pivot moments. You know, certainly reaching out to D-Lab. I had actually received a teaching fellowship that took me to Rwanda about 7 years ago, and I had a chance to go around and see schools that were using STEM education as a vehicle to kind of rebuild from the genocide. And that experience of just seeing this course or this material that I was teaching in school, but seeing an actual country changing and recovering from this horrific, devastating event through STEM education, that just made me realize, oh, we should be doing more with this work than just sort of having kids do kind of packaged labs or read through textbooks. So that was certainly one of those pivot moments. After I did that fellowship in Rwanda, then connecting with D-Lab and hearing about their work and seeing in an actual class, seeing kids changing the world, although it was university level, college level kids, I realized, wow, our students could be doing that as well. That was another one of those pivot moments. The stove project, just see how exciting that was. And interestingly, a student of mine, Alex Emerson, did a little documentary of that stove project, and it made its way to the White House Film Festival, and all of a sudden President Obama was lauding the work of our little stove project that we just sort of created out of, you know, thin air because it seemed like a good thing to be doing. That was another one of those pivot moments. And certainly seeing that video of the first 3D printed prosthetic, you know, I think I kind of feel very strongly that the work that I'd been doing prior to that just had me in the mindset of looking for those authentic opportunities for my students. And if I hadn't had those experiences prior to seeing that video or having that conversation with the designers, it might not have actually popped into my head that would make a good project for my students. It might have just been like one of those things that I ended up doing or not even doing. It just sort of went past me into the ether. But, you know, every time I do one of these projects where we kind of take something that's maybe a little bit edgy or something that seems a little bit audacious for a school to be doing, and every time we do it and we get some incredible like results from it, it just kind of nudges me to continue to look for those sorts of things and be open to those sorts of potential authentic projects that might make a great fit for the work we do, but might, you know, 10 years ago might not have seemed possible to do with kids.
You and I have been listening to Rich Lehrer, Innovation Coordinator and STEM teacher at Brookwood School in Massachusetts. Rich is founder of the Brookwood 3D Design Problem Bank, as well as being a teacher trainer who has served as Education Coordinator for the Enable Educators Exchange. If you'd like more information on the Global 3D Design Problem Bank, go to ultimaker.com/education. Now, Ultimaker is the 3D printing manufacturer with which Rich referenced working before. They're spelled Ultimaker, U-L-T-I-M-A-K-E-R. That's ultimaker.com/education. Meanwhile, you can find out more about the 3D Printing Problem Bank and download Rich's 8-module lesson curriculum on the use of 3D printed projects in the classroom from his website, richlehrer.weebly.com. That's Rich Lehrer, spelling his last name L-E-H-R-E-R, richlehrer.weebly.com.
And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening.
Subscribe to Over Coffee through our website, twomavericks.com. That's TWOMAVERIX.com, twomavericks.com.
And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.